Wednesday, August 5th, 2026, and you're listening to Abounding Grace Radio with Pastor Chris Gordon. Today in the program, we're in the book of Proverbs. We're in chapter 7, starting at verse 1, with a message titled, Thinking Through the Sexual Revolution.
Unbiblical anthropology, that the desires of the human heart are good and right for somebody. And who is to tell anyone differently? Where now somebody's identity is so bound up with their sexuality. The great reason why there is such hatred right now for historic Christianity is precisely because to question somebody's sexuality based on sinful desire is to question who they are.
And now here's today's message from Pastor Chris.
Well, I invite you to turn tonight to Proverbs chapter 4, and then we'll look over at chapter 7. This is just the reading for tonight. I wasn't really slotted to preach tonight, but I was at the missions conference in North Carolina this week, and Steve Howerzile was there with Rhonda, and we were talking. He thought it might be helpful to take some of this. It was like an hour long talk, so I'm not going to do that tonight. Take some of this and try to make it into a sermon, I guess. We'll see how that comes out. So it's not really a sermon. It's not my typical way of exegeting a text. It's going to be a little bit more topical tonight. And that's what we're going to do. Wright was scheduled to exhort, and I called him and he said, Pastor, you want to do this? I got a lot on my plate, so please do take it. So I was great. I will do that. So anyways, Proverbs chapter 4 tonight, beginning at verse 20, and then we'll read into chapter 7. Obviously, we're dealing with a very important subject in our day, and something that I don't feel prepared to be an expert about at all. I've sort of been put into this having written the catechism. They wanted me to talk at the conference on the Reformation Catechism and its use in the church, and I thought, well, that's kind of boring. But I think it's important to say that the Lord has opened a door with that, and it's now going into the eighth language in less than a year. And so there have been lots of printings of it. It's going to go into Arabic now. So it's obviously been somewhat of a help to people because it gives you sort of propositional statements to be able to talk to your children with. And that was sort of the goal of this, to help families in the church and maybe Bible studies and maybe even a sermon series. I don't know. But anyways, I said at the conference what I'd like to do is sort of look at the crucial issues that we're dealing with today, and that's what we're kind of tackling tonight. So beginning at Proverbs 4, beginning at verse 20, my son, be attentive to my words, incline your ear to my sayings, let them not escape from your sight, keep them within your heart, for they are life to those who find them and healing to all their flesh. Keep your heart with all diligence, for from it flows the springs of life. Put away from you crooked speech and put devious talk far from you. Let your eyes look straight forward and gaze, your gaze be straight before you. Ponder the path of your feet, then all your ways will be sure. Do not swerve to the right or to the left. Turn your foot away from evil. Now over to chapter 7. My son, keep my words and treasure up my commandments with you. Keep my commandments and live. Keep my teaching as the apple of your eye. Bind them on your fingers. Write them on the tablet of your heart. Say to wisdom, you are my sister, and call insight your intimate friend to keep you from the forbidden woman, from the adulteress with her smooth words. For at the window of my house I have looked out through my lattice, and I have seen among the simple, I have perceived among the youths, a young man lacking sense. Passing along the street near her corner, taking the road to her house in the twilight, in the evening, in the time of night and darkness, and behold, the woman meets him, dressed as a prostitute, wily of heart. She is loud and wayward, her feet do not stay at home, now in the street, now in the market, and at every corner she lies in wait. She seizes him and kisses him, and with bold face she says to him, I had to offer sacrifices, and today I paid my vows. So now I have come out to meet you, to seek you eagerly, and I've found you. I've spread my couch with coverings, colored linens from Egyptian linen. I perfume my bed with myrrh, aloes, and cinnamon. Come, let us take up our fill of love till morning. Let us delight ourselves with love, for my husband is not at home. He has gone on a long journey. He has taken a bag of money with him. At full moon, he will come home. With much seductive speech, she persuades him. With her smooth talk, she compels him. And at once he follows her as an ox goes to the slaughter, or as a stag is caught fast till an arrow pierces its liver. As a bird rushes into a snare, he does not know that it will cost him his life. And now, O sons, listen to me and be attentive to the words of my mouth. Let not your heart turn aside to her ways. Do not stray into her paths, for many a victim she has laid low, and all her slain are a mighty throng. Her house is the way to Sheol, going down to the chambers of death. And there we'll end the reading of God's word. You imagine if this were Solomon writing, and here's a father sitting down his son, saying, son, I've got to talk to you about something really important in life. I've got to talk to you about really serious things. I've seen a lot of lives ruined by this. Imagine if that were David sitting Solomon down. Kind of fits, doesn't it? You know, it would be wrong just to think that this is about a prostitute standing trying to lure in a young man. This is about Lady Folly and Lady Wisdom, two different paths, and choices that people have. And it's really dealing with the seduction of the heart, the human heart, and the most powerful desires that we come up against in this life. Anything that seduces us away to Lady Folly, anything that pulls us away down that path is exactly what he's talking about in this particular passage. Well, I'd spend a lot more time in that tonight, but I want to take up the subject tonight of what we're dealing with in terms of human sexuality and the new sort of orthodoxy of the sexual revolution. The title doesn't quite fit this, what I'm doing tonight, but I thought it might sell well. In other words, I thought the place would be packed out if I said that, but, you know, sometimes that works, sometimes it doesn't. When I went into ministry and I first entered ministry, you know, it's almost 20 years ago now, I was a young, idealistic pastor, ready to take on the world and defend the Reformed doctrines of grace. I knew that in the Western culture over the past century, we were experiencing a radical change in our understanding of what it means to be human and how that plays out in sexual ethics. But who of us entering the ministry in the early 2000s would be prepared to face a revolution that would overturn in 15 short years the God-ordained institution of marriage? You know, think about how radical that is looking back and then from early 2000s say, you know, that's what you're going to be faced with as a pastor. You ready for that? And all that's going to come with it. And what's to come in the next 15 years? What it has done in a very short period of time is open the floodgates into every form of sexual deviance that is contrary to what God made as good. Everything in Genesis 1 through 3 now is under great assault, and the whole thing is being overturned. I felt equipped, of course, to deal with the challenges more that the reformers face from the inside. You know, that interested me a lot more. That was, you know, we were facing justification issues. We were facing federal vision issues at that time. Find nuances in soteriology is what we called it. Studies of salvation. It didn't take long, however, that I seemed like I was facing an insurmountable problem. The entire world turning around the other way, the entire world demanding our submission to an unbiblical anthropology. A unbiblical anthropology that makes the assumption that the desires of the human heart, whatever they may be, are good and right for somebody if they follow them. And who is to tell anyone differently? Where now somebody's identity is so bound up with their sexuality in this view. The great reason why there is such hatred right now for historic Christianity in this country is precisely because to question somebody's sexuality based on sinful desire is to question who they are. That's what Charles Truman's book, in a nutshell, is all about, Strange New World. Because you're questioning who they are when you're questioning their pursuit of a whatever form of sexual deviance that they are. It's a question for them of being. It's what we call an ontological question. And the very thing we have to deal with and unravel in our day and address is just that point. And so now what we're up against is ever since the Obergefell decision in 2015, when gay marriage was legalized, a flood of assaults have come on us that seek to overturn the entire creational sexual ethic that God established from the beginning for our good. Not only now, we cannot take it for granted at all that non-Christians around us agree on the most basic definition of what it is to be male and female. Our institutions have embraced concepts such as gender fluidity and call believers to declare their preferred pronouns and accept whatever view of gender is espoused by those around them. And let me just say, that is no less true now in historically robust Christian institutions, where parents face sending your colleges, listen, even if it's our brand, you have got to be really smart today and ask the right questions and not just assume, if I send my child off to a certain college that has the brand name I've always known, it's going to go well. That is not the case. We will send our kids now, we're facing sending our kids to what used to be historically robust Christian institutions, now that we'll seek to actively indoctrinate them against everything you've taught them, with the new sexual libertinism of our age. And it will still be called Christian. I don't think you should have to pay for that. Homosexual behavior is now so normalized into the mainstream consciousness of our culture. There's no question that as we see the continual unraveling of all creational norms, contrary to nature, the next wave of sexual deviation will demand the acceptance of polyamory, bestiality, pedophilia. These will be normalized in years to come. You notice recently, I couldn't believe that children are now being encouraged to identify as animals. Children. So what's coming? Full participation in the workplace and the wider society will require a complete submission to whatever are the prevailing ideals of the moral revolution and the proposed reset of all creation norms. That's looks like exactly where it's going. Consequences. Does anyone see them? Dr. Godfrey said something a few weeks ago that made me ponder this in light of this whole thing, where Romans 1 talks about the giving over of people to these things. And he said, you know, Romans 1:18 says the wrath of God is revealed. If something has to be revealed, it can only be seen when it's revealed. It's not seen unless it's revealed. Do you understand what that means? It means that you see what's happening right now in the culture. Judgment. God is giving people over to their sins, and you're seeing the sad consequences of hatred of Him. But here's the scary part to it. They can't see it because it's not revealed to them. Even the wrath of God is concealed in this age until it's revealed. And will be ultimately revealed on the last day. And this is what I saw in the court case that I was on. You know, a deeply religious family, this community. And a molestation case. And when the investigator was put on the stand, the defense tried to undermine Escondido PD investigation, saying, you guys didn't do your job, you didn't do due diligence, you didn't interview this, you didn't interview this person. And the investigator said, are you kidding? This happened 20 years ago. Do you know the backlog of cases I'm dealing with right now? And I've got to go protect all those little girls out there right now. I have priorities. My heart just sank. Consequences. Terrible things happening all around us. I think you saw it this week, didn't you? The mental health of our youth in this country. Look at the sad fruits of what you saw happen. And it's praised by a society under judgment. The sad consequence of hating God. What do we do? This is kind of the question, isn't it? What do we do in the midst of all this? I think we're out of sorts on how to deal with these things. And this is, in my short time, in my 23 minutes left, there's a lot more that could be said tonight. And as I said, I'm no expert in this. But God's given us his word and God's given us help. And one of the things I want to do tonight is just briefly tie together then the pastoral challenges of what we face with our mission. And that's where this is important to see and to think about how should the church respond at these times. There's sort of three ways the church is responding right now, that not the most helpful ways. The first way is that we're trying to find a way of tolerance in the church. And we've been concerned to reach the culture. We've been so concerned about reaching the culture. And so we're trying to find a way to appease the lies. To coexist in the church with this. And I think what you're seeing is, at least from their from the outside's perspective on these issues with historic Christianity, there's no coexisting. There's no coexisting. It's pretty evident this is not going to be tolerated, what we believe. The other extreme is to become angry. And I think we see this on many social media sites, that our job is just simply to work hard to fix the culture. That's a pretty big burden to take on. I have to worry about my house. I've got to worry about the Escondido URC. But is it my job to go fix the entire culture on this matter? There are many Christians who are pushing us to that. And I think first things first, but we'll come back to that. The other response is to do what we've always done well, is just be Victorian about all these things. Especially when it comes to the impressionable, think about it, you know, which are young people. We want to leave the impression that these are not the things that we touch in the church. We don't talk about these things because the church is too holy for this. That's not going to help the next generation. We've got to be open. We've got to be direct. We've got to be compassionate. We've got to talk to them. And we can't punt the football to RYS to think that's where pornography will be talked about. That's where sexual morality will be talked about. That's where homosexuality will be talked about, but not in the church. That's not going to work. The Victorian days are over. The bashfulness about this is over. It has to be. So those are the sort of responses that I think are in front of us now. And this is where I think our past, we have to think together about our mission as Christians. And we have to get to the heart of issues. And this is why I love studying how our Lord dealt with these things. Did Jesus ever deal with rampant sexual immorality in the culture? And could you think of a verse where he did? An account? And the reality is, he did many times. Sometimes we have to look deeper into passages to understand exactly what Jesus was doing and to see how he helped people and what his aim was in the face of very difficult, challenging situations like this. And that takes you to a well-known passage today that you all know. You can turn to John 4 just for a minute with me, and we're going to look at the woman at the well just for a moment. I think she captures for us something tremendously helpful in understanding the most basic problem that we're dealing with when it comes to issues of human sexuality. So it's John chapter 4. You know the story. Jesus had to go to Samaria because he had a divine appointment on his calendar to meet and to save this woman. It's a remarkable story because the Jews wouldn't travel there, of course. And the Samaritans were known to the Jews as a bunch of half-breeds. They were also known as grossly sexually immoral people. So this is not the kind of people the average Jew would ever go talk with or visit with. The Lord goes right there violating all the conventional standards and norms of the day, the superimposed barriers of the Pharisees, ethnic, and now notice here even in terms of a woman. Jews never talked with Samaritans. Rabbi Jesus would have never addressed an adulteress. Jesus knows her. He knows everything about her. And I think what's remarkable about this particular passage is the compassion of Christ. He has known that this was a child given to him from his father that he was to save. Salvation has to happen. You understand that when it comes to, this is one of the great truths of election, when it comes to God's elect, salvation will happen. Nothing's stopping it. But sexual immorality is no easy chore here to deal with. How do you get into the heart of someone who's so deeply rooted in sin? What do we do? Well, Jesus comes to her. Well, she comes to him on the well. His divine appointment was set, and he asks her for a drink. And she, of course, is confused why he would even care. How is it you, a Jew, speak to me as a Samaritan? Jesus, of course, asks her for a drink. She recognizes he doesn't have the bucket. Notice what he says. Whoever drinks of this water will thirst again. But whoever drinks of the water that I shall give him shall never thirst. But the water that I shall give him will become in him a fountain of water springing up into everlasting life. Proverbs 4, ponder your heart. Out of it come the issues of life. You'll have something springing up out of unto everlasting life. Jesus is concerned with a woman who is known as somebody who is grossly sexually immoral in the culture. He is concerned that she's not saved, and that she has not had water that is truly satisfying. And that's the great problem here. Everyone by nature is trying to fill their hearts with something to satisfy themselves with something other than Christ. Well, what are some of the most powerful desires that we have? What are some of the most powerful desires that we have? Is it sexual desire? That's the world in which we find ourselves. It's your sexual desires that must be followed, we're told. Think about that. I have water to give you that you have not known. What are your most powerful desires? What are the desires that lead us captive? Well, it's a post-Freudian culture. Freud said that who you are is really determined by the object of your desires, okay? He said your sexual desires are the most powerful desires that belong to your inner life. Freud put the individual at the center of all things. It's all about you as the individual and what your inherent desires are that makes you who you are. This is what he said, to ask the question, who am I and what am I becoming? Well, if sexual desires are the most powerful desires that we have, he says that's the category for understanding you. You see where we got all this nonsense. Everything needs to be evaluated through the fulfilling of your desires. And because of that, the great goal of humanity is happiness, he said.
That's all the time we have for you today. We thank you for joining us here on Abounding Grace Radio with Pastor Chris Gordon. We hope you'll join us again next time for part two of this message from Pastor Chris. Thanks again. Until next time. God bless.